We're on number 21. One should not eulogize or praise anyone else before the deity. One should not speak any ill names before the deity or pass air before the deity. One should not fail to worship the deity according to one's means. This is interesting because it said, Krishna says in Gita, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yome Bhakti Vyachati. If one offers me a leaf, a flower, water with devotion, I accept it. So someone, maybe a Kropati or a rich man, he says, oh, Krishna, that's a little leaf. So I offer one tulsi leaf in the morning and one piece of mystery, and I go to my factory. And I eat chapan bhog every day for lunch and I have a good time. But I don't give anything to Krishna. So this is why I say, according to one's means. If you're wealthy, then you should offer some opulent worship. If you're very poor, like you see in some very, very poor temples, they offer in the morning, they offer some sugar. Because it's Balya Bhog. Balya Bhog should be some sweet for Krishna when he wakes up in the morning, 3:30, 4:30, like this. So they don't have, in good temples, well-established temples, they offer 5, 6, 7 sweets, like in ISKCON, they have incredibly high standard. Sometimes it's 7 or 8 sweets at Balya Bhog at Mangalarti. You have condensed milk, kheer, or condensed milk, whatever that's called, and sweet rice, burfi, sandesh, rasgulla. It's quite an opulent offering. So because we have some opulence, but at least in the most impoverished temple, they'll be offering this sugar candy. So at least that much we have to do. A little sugar candy with a piece of tulsi leaf. One should not eat anything which is not offered first to Krishna. So this is pretty significant. I know that one sannyasi, he used to travel in America. He had a vow that he wouldn't eat anything. He would only eat prasad from the temple deities. He was traveling from New York to Philadelphia, Philadelphia to Washington, Washington to Atlanta, Atlanta to New Orleans, and here and there, and different around America, making his circuit. And many times he'd be on the road for one day or almost 1.5 days, and he would just drink water. And I asked him, so why don't you just buy some fruits or buy some dry fruit or something like we do on Sankirtan, make an offering. He said, no, I want to eat Krishna prasad. A guy can make an offering to the picture, but it's not the same as taking prasad from the deities that Prabhupada installed. So he had this type of vow. So that's one end of strictness. And then when only eat food coming right from the deities. And probably it was Mahaprasadam because it was, sannyasi, usually sannyasi's got the Mahaprasad. But here the injunction from Rupa Goswami is only eat food. Don't eat anything which is not offered first to Krishna. So this is very... Of course, brahmacharis and live in a temple, sannyasis or whatever, we don't have much choice, pretty much, if we're actually a brahmachari, because we've taken a vow of poverty. When we first joined in Los Angeles, no one had any money, and if you had any money, the temple president would turn you upside down and shake it out of your pockets and make sure you didn't have any. Yeah, anything left. And when we went on Sankirtan, we turned everything in. There was no idea to keep a little bit for ourselves. So we only ate when they gave us prasadam. Twice a day there's prasadam, then we ate, or maybe 3 times, a little maha at night. But this is actually a very important principle. It's so important that this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is like the... And along with Jiva Goswami's commentaries, as you can say, the complete book of bhakti sadhana, especially sadhana bhakti, because so much of these first chapters, especially what we're discussing now, is vaidhi sadhana. We haven't even gotten to raganuga sadhana. But this is like the very foundation, the strict vaidhi, that we must, the reason for all these rules and regulations is actually to establish the principle of surrender in our mind and hearts. oh, I don't want to make an offering. It's too much trouble. I mean, it's just a little bit of fruit. It's a piece of fruit. Why do I have to offer? Just let me munch up this apple and be on my way. I have to wash the apple. And I eat the skins of the apple because I don't care. But I know Krishna has a standard for the deity. I have to peel the skin off. You know, then, and then you have to take out the seeds, you know, and you have to make a nice little piece and put it on the plate and put tulsi in. You know, I just want a little snack of an apple. Why do I have to go to offer it? So all this kind of thinking and mentality is nothing but my, maybe in time, place, and circumstance, you can't whip out a plate and whip out a plate on the train and get your tulsi leaves because there's no tulsi on the train and no tulsi plants growing on the boxcars. And, you know, wash everything off properly because the only sink is in the bathroom. And wash everything and make an offering because you don't usually carry so many pictures around with you and are easily accessible. Usually they're packed in your bag. So then in Manasi Puja, because that's one of the seven deities, one of the seven murtis, Manasa Murti, it's mentioned in Nectar Devotion. And so that murti is for the higher and more advanced devotees, Uttamadikari. They worship the Manasa Murti and they practice Manodharma. Manodharma is a religion of the mind, which is basically Manasi Seva, which is the main limb of pure Raghunuga Bhakti, is service rendered within the mind, within one's Anantas Chintadeya, mentally conceived spiritual body, which one receives at the platform of Bhava. So when they're listing the different murtis in the Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita, I mean, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it says murtis made of stone, made of wood, made of metal, made of jewels. And then it says, and in the mind, deity in the mind. You can worship deity in the mind. Who can worship deity in the mind? Bhakti Tom, Bhakti Joe, Sunil Gupta, you know. No, this is not for the Kanishta Adhikari. This is not for the, in Madhyam, you can say Madhyam, but Madhyam Uttam, who's on the level of Rati, going to this Uttam platform of Bhava. So those devotees, those very advanced devotees, Krishna is established in their heart. And Krishna is established, the murti of Krishna, the very form of Radha and Krishna, are in their heart. Govinda Vishram. It says one bhajan that Govinda is resting within the heart. Narottam is explaining. Govinda Vishram, that Govinda is resting in the heart of the pure devotees. So a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada, Radha and Krishna are always dancing in his heart. And simply by closing his eyes, when he closes his eyes externally, he opens the eyes of his heart. He appears, oh, my Gurudev has closed his eyes externally. But what that means is he's closed his external eyes to open the internal eyes. And when he opens his internal eyes, or the internal eyes of his heart, then he sees Radha and Krishna standing there beautifully in the altar of his heart. And then with all his submission and beautiful prayers of humility, he makes a beautiful offering of this fruit or whatever is brought, or peanuts or whatever you may procure on the train for the sustenance of your body when you're traveling. And more often, usually Prabhupada carried tiffins. This may be some exceptionally rare case where Prabhupada bought some puris from the platform. Because
fruits.
Oh, okay, it was fruits. It was only fruits.
Yeah.
And for some snack, maybe after his tiffin or whatever. And then and Prabhupada just kind of closed his eyes and said, Sri Vishnu or said, Jai Radha Govinda, you know, please accept this, and he took it. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, when his father offered him a beautiful cup of nectar, mixed juices. Like you buy these cans, mixed juices, apricot, mango, orange, and you buy these little boxes of fruit juice, mixed fruit juices. So he offered him a cup of beautiful mango juice. It was mango season, so he made a mango drink, mango amras, and he put in enough, he added enough cyanide to that fruit nectar, that fruit drink,
poison,
to kill 100 men, and cyanide is an extremely powerful poison. So what Prahlad did, because he's a devotee, he closed his eyes and he said, oh Lord Vishnu, please accept this nectar drink. And then he drank it. So because his consciousness is pure, purely Krishna conscious, he transformed that vish into amrit. So vish means poison, it became amrit. And Harani Kashyapu was watching. Oh, when will you die? And he didn't die. So he was amazed. Where do you get your power from, Prahlad? Where is the source of your power? Maybe you've seen these dramas so many times. So this can be done. So this itself, what I was trying to say is that this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is many, many different rules and regulations of Vaidhi Sadhana and some brief description of Raganuga Sadhana. Then a description of Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. And then an outline of Bhava Bhakti, then Prema Bhakti with a description of different rasas with a small explanation of Vibhav and Vaibhav and all these things. And then, now, after writing all these books, then Rupa Goswami wanted to write the essence of his teachings. What are the essential, the absolutely essential teachings that one must follow in order to attain his Siddha Sarup and eternal service of Radha Krishna and the growth of Vrindavan. So he summarized all of his instructions in a book of sutras, which is called Upadesha Amrita. Right? This is so much Upadesha. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is an ocean of Upadesha. An ocean has many waves. And this book, the ocean, the Sindhu, Bhakti Sindhu, is divided into this Eastern Ocean and Western Ocean. You see here in the back, different chapters are different oceans. Prabhupada explains that in the index. So the ocean has so many waves. How many waves are there in the ocean? Unlimited. Right. So there's unlimited waves. So the waves of the nectar devotion, there's eastern side, first wave, second wave, third wave, fourth wave. Then there's the southern side with five waves, the western side, five waves, the northern side with nine waves. Right? And that's only four sides. And then, so the eastern side goes up to Sadhana Bhakti, and then you go into like that. There's different oceans. So the ocean, different sides of the ocean. So there are many waves. So the waves in this ocean, there's unlimited waves, which are actually instructions. There's so many different instructions. You see, there's these here are just things we have to avoid doing. There's 32 sevaparas. These are different sevaparas. There's 32 of them. Many, many different offenses. 32 in this agamas, and there's more listed. And the Varaha Puran. So there's many, many ways, many, many rules and regulations, many, many things we have to observe. Now, Rupa Goswami took all those ways and he condensed it to nectar. Nectar devotion. Chapter 8, offenses to be avoided from the Varaha Puran. One should not touch the deity in a dark room. Understood what that was about till they came to India. When they're in the West, we never heard of a dark room. You turn on the switch and lights come on, and you have a dimmer switch in the morning, and you have very faint light when you wake up the deities. When you come to India, there's power shortage, and there's no generator, and it's all dark. Then you understand what it means to put the deities to rest in a dark room or wake up the deities in a dark room. That this is considered to be an offense. One has to light a candle, or in South India they solve this problem by having a kanda deep, or always having an oil lamp burning in a temple, so they don't have to worry about the saparat. And one should not fail to strictly follow the rules and regulations in worshipping the deity. One should not enter the deity without first making some sound. Harivo! So usually temples have some bell. Outside you can ring, or if there's no bell, then you, like Radha Kund, you go very, you just walk off the street into different temples. So to observe the etiquette of making some sound, you say, Jai Gopinath, Jai Anangamandri, Jai Radha Govinda Ki Jai, Radha Govinda Ki Jai. Because you won't find any bell there unless you're carrying your own bells. You're carrying kartals or wampers. Just come in dancing and chanting Hare Krishna, then Govindaji will know you're coming. It's a pretty common affair in the West, at least in the West, not so much in India. But when people enter into different rooms and offices, they have the principle of ringing the doorbell.
Ding dong. Oh, someone is at the door. Please open the door.
Or someone knocks. Open the door.
So it's the custom and standard. So when we go to Krishna's house, the mandir, then we should knock on the door. Three times knock on the door. Sometimes devotees do like that. If there's a wooden door, they knock. They make some sound. Knock on the door, that's a little bit like Shantaras. But if you're a little, at least in Dasya Ras, you'll identify yourself by your voice print. As you have a fingerprint, you also have a voice print, which is, everyone has a different voice print. So you, if you're in Shantaras with Krishna, not a very distant formal relationship, then you'll knock or you'll ring the bell, ding dong, and then Krishna will have to guess, who is it? But if you're at least in Dasya Ras, then you'll say, Bhagavan Sri Krishna Ki. And then Radharani will say, oh no. Krishna, let's get out of here. That's that crazy sannyasi. And we have to look at him when he comes in the temple. Oh, let's turn the other way. Let's go. So they'll know, oh, that's our useless servant coming. I hear my servant's voice. I hear it. As I get my gate, someone knocks on the door. So what do we say? We say, Kone, who is it? And then the person says, you know, Haribo, and then you recognize the voice, or he says, it's so-and-so. Then you recognize, oh, this is my servant, this is my chokidar, this is that, my friend. Devotees have developed very good sense of hearing, because that's our profession. Our profession is to hear. Hear nicely the holy name of the Lord, very attentively. This is one of the principles of our yoga system, is attentive hearing. Practically speaking, that is the main principle. The main principle, of course, is to smartavyo satatam Vishnu. The main principle is to always remember Krishna, smriti or smartavyo satatam Vishnu. Satatam means at all times, eternally, sat. To always remember Vishnu or Krishna and never forget him. That is the principle of a Vaishnava. But in order to come to that proper position, it is certainly helpful if one is very attentive in hearing. Because if we attentively hear the Maha Mantra and attentively hear the teachings of Guru and Shastra, then it will be very difficult for us to forget Krishna. Because by that attentive hearing of Shastra, Shabda Brahman, and Krishna's holy name, we will become rapidly and quickly purified, and Krishna will reside in our heart and mind permanently and at all times and in all places. So we won't be able to ever forget Krishna or be separated from Krishna even for a moment. This is the goal. So attentive hearing. So Krishna also is expert at hearing. So when he hears, he wants to hear some sound before we go into the temple. In this Radhagiridhari temple and on the banks of Shamakund in Ananga Mandri's Kunj, our temple bell is at the chimes. Or you knock on the door, or you say, Giridhari Lala Ki Jai, Giriraj Dharan Ki Jai. And this is the way. And so in all, one should follow this regulation. And it will bring us out of the impersonal mode that we're in. And it will awaken some feelings towards the Lord when we start expressing ourselves in following Rupa Goswami. I used to live at Damodar Temple, and right in Prabhupada's rooms is quite close to the front door. So we'd hear the different bhaktas. I remember one bhakta, he would be in coming by Seva Kunj. He was walking. He wore a yellow lungi and a yellow lungi like a sannyasi, and lungi like a sannyasi with bright yellow like a Brahmin, and a bundi. Very tall figure, very dashing, debonair, oiled hair. He's about 45 years old, tall, probably a Brahmin. Chandan on his forehead, kajal on his eyes, very handsome figure. You come every morning for darshan, do prakrama. I don't know his name, but I saw him moving here and there in the morning. Maybe he was retired Brahmin or whatever. And I hear him from Sevakun's side, coming down the road, side road, coming around near Damodara, before he even entered the temple. Jai Damodar! He had a very deep voice. Jai Damodar! Jai Damodar! And I'd be chanting japa. He's, oh, here comes this guy, you know. He has his voice print. As soon as I hear that voice, I would picture that man with his yellow lungi and the bundi, different color, gray or green or different color. Very stylish, debonair Brahmin, Rishvasi Brahmin. And then you get closer, then he would come in the temple. And by the time he got in the temple, his pitch was quite ecstatic. Jai Damodar! Jai Damodar! Because he was anticipating seeing his beloved Lord from 200-300 meters away, so he starts bellowing out, Jai Damodar! Jai Damodar! Jai Damodar! Then when he would come in the door, it was like uproarious. Jai Damodar! Now he's thinking, I'm hearing this with my ears, and I'm simply a monkey and a dog sitting over here in the corner of this temple. But the Supreme Personality of God, the Rasika Shekhar, the beloved of Radharani, is standing there on the altar. Was Radharani and Lalita, and he's playing his flute and watching the Yamuna and enjoying so many pastimes there in Sevakunj. And he's also hearing this devotee. And how much he must be appreciating that this person is announcing to the sleeping world or the waking world of Sevakunj, all the Grihasthas lining the road, taking their baths and waking up at 6:45 in the morning and drinking their tea and biscuits. And you know, he's announcing, he's proclaiming the glories. He's a one-man kirtan party coming down the street. Jai Damodar, Jai Damodar, Jai Damodar. Very nice. And later he shifted over to the Raman Reti side, so I used to see him on Prikkam over there, and always Bhagi Bihari La. So I was always remember this person. He certainly was following this rule of Rupa Goswami, quoting from Varaha Purana. One should not enter the temple of the deity without first making some sound. Rapunzel. There was one story about the prince and Rapunzel. Rapunzel was a princess, and she was extremely beautiful, but she, in the old ancient medieval times, in the 1500s, the princesses were always locked in their rooms, just like in our Krishna book we have the story of Usha and Aniruddha, right? And Usha was having dreams of Aniruddha, who was Krishna's grandson, and his whole story there, Krishna Dwarka Leela. So there, Usha was not allowed out of her room because she's a Kanyakumari, she's a virgin girl. So Rapunzel was a German princess in the medieval times, 1500s, Middle Ages. She was very beautiful. She had very, very long, long, long hair. Extremely long hair. So one prince fell in love with her, somehow or other. And so he wanted to meet her and somehow be with her. So he came to her door, or came below the palace wall. And there was no way of getting in the palace, so he would call out to her, Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair. In other words, open your hair, you know, she had a braid or beanie or whatever, but throw it down, throw it out the window, and I'll use it for a rope, and I'll climb the wall, I'll scale the wall of your father's palace, and we can meet together in the privacy of your private quarters from which you're not allowed to leave. So there he's calling the name of his beloved, making some sound. So Krishna is our beloved, or at least we're aspiring to be the beloved of Krishna, beloved of Radha. But we just kind of zip into the temple and, Hari Bhava Govindaji. But it's like, guess who's coming? Hari Bhava, Radha Govindadev. It's quite a nice rasa when you think, Krishna, I'm here. So, these rules and regulations, although they seem like vidhi, because this whole section here is Vidhi. This is the Vaidhi Sadhana section. And all these rules come under the category of Vaidhi Sadhana. But if these rules of Vaidhi are performed with Vrag and with feeling or Bhav, then very quickly one comes to Rag Bhakti and Bhava Bhakti. So when one actually, if he just follows the rule, this is the rule, and out of fear of violating scriptural injunction, and out of duty, and out of allegiance and obedience, I will follow the rules. I don't want to, but I'll follow it, because I surrender to my guru, and the guru said I should follow the scriptures. I'll follow the rules. So this same rule remains on the platform of Vaidhi, and doesn't elevate one or boost one to the platform of Bhava Bhakti. But if this same rule, if it's done not because you have to, but because you understand the emotional feeling behind it, and you trace out the presence of the Lord, and you trace out the heart of the Lord in this rule, and you accept this rule and agree to follow this rule out of an internal desire to please the Lord, out of a sense of attachment and love, then this so-called rule becomes favorable, becomes an udipina, or becomes a stimulant to awaken Bhava Bhakti. Because you perform the activity with a sense of Bhava, with a sense of Bhava. It's called Bhava Bhas, a reflection of Bhava, with some feeling, with some love. Oh yes, I understand. I'm going to see my beloved, and oh Krishna, Radha Govinda, Radha Govinda, I'm coming, and I'm going to see you in just 1 minute. Radha Govinda, Radha Govinda, so beautiful, please bless me, please accept me, please let me be yours someday. Then these rules become very nice. So-called rules become, they give shape, these rules are actually ways of shaping your bhav. Just like someone says, I'm a cook. So then, well, what's? Can you give shape to that statement? I'm a cook. Yes, you sit down. I'll give shape to it. And you go in the kitchen and you cook sabji and puris and cake and dal and all kinds of sweets, and you bring it out. And says, yeah, this is what it means. I'm a cook. It means I can make all these wonderful, tasty things. So this is what it means that I have feelings or devotion for the Lord, that I express it in all these different ways and different forms. So these rules are means by which we can express different aspects of our love for the Lord. The house of the Lord is sacred. The property of the Lord is sacred. As soon as you cross the street is not the temple. But as soon as you know what the doorway is, like these curtains may be closed, but that's the door of the temple. And not only that's the door of the temple, but that gate is the door of the temple. Because that's the gate to the Radha Giridhari Mandir. So if all those doors, from this door is closed and that gate is closed, then you don't actually have to follow this rule. Although from outside that gate you may cry, oh. If you go to Nathdwara in Rajasthan, there's a beautiful deity of Madhavendra Puri known as Sri Nathji. So there's about so many gates before you get inside to the actual where the curtains are. There's a door there, then there's a curtain behind it. Then there's doors into the Darshan Mandap, and then there's an outside door, another door into the pre-mandap or whatever, the waiting room. So people come a half hour to an hour before Mangalarti. Mangalarti is at 5 in the winter and 4:30 in the summer or something. And then they sit out there, several doors away from them. You don't know if there's a curtain or no curtain, or you don't see anything. And they sit there, men on one side, men and women on the other side, from 300 to 500 to 1,000 people, 1 hour before Mangalarti, and they start singing songs glorifying Nathji. Ah, Nathji, ah, Gopal, Nathji. And then they graduate to Krishna, then the door is always open. It's like a blind guy, you know. Was he seeing Krishna or not? So you go in there, the curtain's closed, they say, Jai, Jai Govinda Dev. This is the rule, you follow the rule, he likes it. When the curtain opens, then it's more, oh, Jai Govinda. You ever go in the Bankibihari temple in Vrindavan, people come in, they're in the main room, and there's only the there's a door and then the curtains. I find the door is a deity's curtains, a deity room's door. The door is closed, and everybody's waiting, and it's just milling around talking this, that. And some people are saying, Bhanki Vihari Lal, and every so often they go, Bhanki Vihari Lal, Ki, Joy! And everybody says, Jai. And then they're just talking this, that. Bhanki Vihari Lal, Ki, Jai. That's all, there's no kirtan or anything, they just chant this over. They just chant this over and over. Then finally they come out and open the 20 minutes, they open all the locks, open the doors. Oof. Then the curtain's there. Now it's only 2 feet away from Bhanki Vihari. As soon as the doors open, everybody thinks, oh, it's darshan. Bhanki Vihari, la, kira, jai. Oh. Then when they see the curtains are there, everyone goes, oh. They make this sound, oh, we can't see him. And then the guy holds one curtain. And there's two Brahmins, one on each side of two curtains, one on each, holding each curtain. Then they're holding it. Everybody's, Bhanki Vihari La Ki Jai, Bhanki Vihari La Ki Jai. And finally, he starts opening the curtain really slow. This first darshan, the other guy's going real slow. There he's going, ah, Bhanki Vihari La, and then they open up, Bhanki Vihari La Ki Jai. So they get the darshan. And then they for maybe 1 minute, then they close it. And everybody goes, oh. Then they open it again. 1 second later. Ah, Bhanki Vihari La Ki Jai. It's all different styles and different temples. It's really, really, Krishna enjoys all these things. Four, one should not offer any foodstuffs to the deity which has been seen by dogs or lower animals. So generally they have some cloth. They have some cloth covering the offering when they're bringing it in, or they close the doors before they bring in the offering, or they pull a curtain, or they put some cloth on the offering plate over the preparation, so you only see a cloth and a plate. Or in some temples, they really, really go to extremes. It seems like, but I guess that's the old standard. Because in Jagannath Puri, there's a tunnel. You know, tunnel? Underground passageway that goes from the deity kitchen and comes right up in the deity room where the deities are. So, because there's even rules, which are not mentioned here, in some shastras it says a bird should not see it either. Of course, it may poop on it also. But a bird should not see it, a crow should not see the offering. So if some kitchens are outside in these ancient temples, they're kitchen is quite separate building from the, usually it is a separate building from the deity room. It's a separate building because it's quite large in these old temples. So in Jagannath Mandir and Jagannath Puri, there's the whole tunnel, they cook all the offerings and they go under this tunnel and it comes up, so no dog is going to see, no human being, no Malachan, no non-Brahman, only the cooks going past and back and forth, the Bajaris. It's extremely protected and guarded. So no one should... Number five, one should not break silence while worshipping. When you're doing puja, you should be meditating deeply on the Lord. And as you go higher in your vaidhi sadhana, then your vaidhi becomes mixed with brag. You're performing vaidhi at a particular time and you're performing your archan. And you're thinking of Krishna as that particular place at that time. Nandagaon getting his bath. At the same time, I'm bathing him here. And he's surrounded by this coward boy, and this mandri, that mandri, and his shoulder's doing this and that. Rohini's doing this and that. So that's when Vaidhi becomes mixed with Brahma. So this requires silence and meditation. And of course, Prabhupada also defines silence as chanting Hare Krishna. This is the perfect silence to chant Hare Krishna. Jiva Goswami gives commentaries on these passages and also on other passages. That deity worshiping that is not accompanied by the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is not accepted by the Lord. So when one is performing puja, then one should chant or listen, have a tape of Prabhupada chanting kirtan while one is doing arti.
or you should chant a song or have some family members chant some song or should be singing along. Shouldn't be the puja should be done along with the chanting of Hare Krishna. You can chant in your mind, or you can chant softly, or you can chant in kirtan. That's not considered breaking silence, according to Jiva Goswami. In fact, it's required. The performance of puja must be accompanied with chanting. That's also mentioned in the ISKCON Deity Worship book, and they cite the reference from Jiva Goswami in regard to that point. Of course, silent, we can also take the meaning of breaking silence to mean you're doing puja and you yell out to your mother in the kitchen, "Hey mom, don't forget to put some cookies in my lunch tiffin." All right, because it's grihastas, they also do puja. So silence means not talking to your friends. What to speak of answering your cell phone while you're doing puja? "Oh, wait a minute, Krishna, I have a call on my cell phone. It's very urgent." When you're doing puja, it's Krishna. You're in the spiritual world, in your spiritual body, in your siddhadeya. At least that's the ultimate idea. We're aspiring for that, so we should try to be serious about this practice. Otherwise, if we're not ready to be serious, then we shouldn't do puja. Puja is serious seva, not for whimsical personalities. Then number 6, one should not pass urine or evacuate while engaged in worshipping. This sometimes becomes difficult, but one should try to avoid it. It's considered an offense, although it happens sometimes. And one's doing puja and his kidneys are bursting or his bladder is bursting, and he has to attend to the nature's functions. But should try to avoid that at all costs. It happens. I've seen it many a time, and even in Indian bajaris and Indian temples. In Damodar Temple, I often saw the bajari come out in the middle of his puja and pass water, change his dhoti into his... He had his jute dhoti or silk dhoti for puja. He'd wear his gamsha and pass water, and he would wash his knees to wash with water under the faucet, his knees to his feet, his elbows to his hands, wash out his mouth, then do achman, put on his puja dhoti and go back and do puja. That's considered to be acceptable standard, a minimum snan for passing urine. If someone has to pass stool, then they have to take a complete bath, put on new fresh cloth, and go back to do puja. So it's a great inconvenience to the Lord. Of course, we may think it's a great inconvenience to us to have to take another shower. "Oh, I just took one shower 20 minutes ago, now another shower." Well, it's not Krishna's fault. It's your fault because you're not controlling your senses. So you're not eating at regulated times, so you're passing all off schedule. Or you're eating too much, or you're sick, which probably caused by overeating anyway. But if one is in the temple, the specific reference is one is offering arti. Because puja, we may be confused about puja and arti, because puja can mean different things. So we have to make some differentiation. So when one is bathing the Lord or dressing the Lord, the doors are closed. So you're at that point in time when the doors are closed, you don't know who's coming in the temple and you don't know who's going out of the temple. Therefore you're absorbed in the intimate seva of the Lord, and it's meant to be like that. So you're not stopping anything, you're not speaking anything except Maha Mantra, and you're not leaving to pass urine or stool or anything. You're just absorbed in dressing, offering boga. But arti, the door of the deity room is open, and Thakurji is giving darshan. That's also puja. And so is dressing and bathing and offering bhoga is also puja. But the regulation says when one is offering arakti, if one sees that some outsider, some yatri, some atiti, some unknown person, not that one of the devotees are in the temple, but some outside yatri or visitor from an unknown or foreign place comes into the temple during arakti, it's not that you have to, but it's kind of like it's not exactly, someone's here, drop everything, run off. Yeah, some hippie has come in from Haight-Ashbury with his stinky socks, and he's a drug addict and a womanizer, and he just came into the temple during Artik in the afternoon. Everyone's on Sankirtan, and I cook the boga, and I'm making the Artik, and the temple president is home sleeping, and I'm the only one in the temple, and some smelly hippie has come in, so I should stop all the puja and go off and greet him and get him a plate of maha and wash his feet and greet him and offer him an asan. So there must be some vichar, there must be some consideration. So many rakshasas came to Vrindavan. Were they invited by Krishna? Vrindavan is the temple of Krishna. Agasura, Putana. Krishna should have done puja to them or worshipped them because they were guests in his temple. Agasura, Bakasura, Putana. Vrindavan is Krishna's temple. He lives here. So the temple is Vrindavan. So it's not that any rakshasa special has been invited by Krishna. Oh, Putana, please come over to Gokul and kill me. That's why there must be discrimination. One should not think that a demon that comes to the temple to throw the deities off the altar is invited by Krishna. In New Vrindavan, a bunch of motorcycle demons came and they threw Radharani off the altar and broke her and shot some devotees. They were invited by Krishna. This mentality is quite upside down. They are demons, and sometimes demons try to destroy Krishna's lila, so they should be killed. So they were not invited by Krishna. They were not it was not arranged by Krishna's lila shakti. This is all speculation. Demons and devotees are existing, and they're moving independently and differently. Devotees are being moved by the will and desire of the Lord, and demons are being moved by their own desire. So they try to interfere with Krishna's pastimes, and then they're killed by Krishna or the devotees. So when Jiva Goswami says that one can, not that one, that one, every time someone comes and says, oh, gee, every day I offer the arti and some smelly hippie comes in, I have to stop all the puja and spend a half hour with this dirty hippie. One may, while one is offering arti, if some exalted Vaishnava, enters the temple, Vaishnava, Tila, Kantimala, Doti, enters the temple, exalted means Madhyamadikari, Uttamadikari, and one must learn how to identify. But if you're offering arti and you see that at least there's all the signs of a Vaishnava, and then you may turn and say, oh, Maharaj, just sit down. I finished the puja and I can take care of you. I'm just by myself in the temple. I said, okay, carry on the puja, I'll sit here. This is the type of behavior they're speaking of. This is what it means. That is no offense. Because what happened? You broke silence while doing puja. Or because you're following this other rule to greet an elevated Vaishnava that enters the temple when you're the only one there. I must understand the details. A demon comes in with dynamite in his hand. Oh, Krishna's invited you. Please take some Amrasan and then blow up the deities. Because, Krishna invited you here. Please, you sit down. I'm doing artik, but you came in the temple to blow up the temple. Please, you take some sweets and everything. And you'd be happy. Here's some water and a cushion. Let me finish the artik, then you blow up the temple. Is it right? Is that like that? Some people are not, a snake comes into the temple, must be dealt with accordingly. I remember once in the Berkeley temple, was Govardhan Puja. And we had a big Govardhan Hill there in the temple room and fenced off. And part of the program, it was made of olive or something, pakoras, very big, big, big. We're going to circumambulate Govardhan Hill and then distribute the prasadam. We're telling a leela and there were some dramas. A big, big program, Sunday program, worshipping Govardhan Hill. In Berkeley, California, in the San Francisco Berkeley Temple. So then some Indian, I don't know where they got the idea from, or something crazy. In the middle of this Govardhan Puja, he brought a cow there. He had a farm outside of San Francisco. You know, everything was arranged. We had our whole program. All of a sudden, this Indian brought a cow as a guest. And everyone started circumambulating Govardhan Hill, and he came in the temple front door and came in the temple room with a huge Holstein cow. They're quite a large animal, like the size of an Indian bull or something. And nice cow, beautiful. So the cow, everyone was like, wow. And everyone, so many Indian guests we had on program, and Westerners also. They thought that the temple devotees had arranged this thing just to, you know, get the flavor of Govardhan. And everybody's, wow. Anyway, so this cow came in and did prikman and got excited and passed urine everywhere on the floor, and passed some, usually stool comes alongside that, the package deal. Pass a good amount of stool. So that type of guest is always welcome. Cow is always welcome, even when not invited. So I don't know if the Pujari stopped his puja to welcome Komata, but she was certainly welcomed by all the other devotees. What a great deal of surprise, and a combination of surprise and appreciation. Everyone, temple president, who brought this guy? You know, like, no one knew this mystery cow. And seeing how all the devotees were kind of, you know, mixed feelings about it, the Indian guy that bought the cow was quiet. So no one knew who bought the cow. It was a very funny thing. He is afraid, the guy that brought it was afraid everyone was going to beat him up. But finally, we found the owner of the cow. And fed a huge amount of halava to the cow. Funny things sometimes we see in life, no? Number seven, when we offer incense, it says when you offer agarbhati, you're supposed to offer pushpa. Flower also. You know, fragrant flower. But it also explains in Jiva Goswami's commentary, you can offer scent. Incense and scent. Scent means fragrant oils. Some cotton, pure cotton dipped in fragrant oil can be offered also after one offers the incense. And flower also means flower garland. 8, it is an offense to offer useless flowers without any fragrance. They should not be offered. This is an important aparad. I mean, important rule to be noted. Many times devotees buy flowers because the malis sell them, because they'll sell anything to make a buck, as they say, or make a rupee. So they pick these white flowers that grow in abundance on one big kind of bush-like tree. They grow in abundance and they have absolutely zero smell. They're white, they have 3 petals, they look like this kind of thing, they go like this.
Tiger.
So they're like used for fillers, some roses and some taiga and this and that. So, and usually cheap, they're 2 rupees or 5 rupees, so devotees are cheap. Or devotees don't have much money. Oh, I want to offer a garland to Krishna, but how much is this? So they come to the mali, and they say, oh, I want a garland. How much is a rose garland? They say, 10 rupees. And devotee doesn't have much money, or at least he doesn't have much money for Krishna. He has lots of money for Bisleri water, 17 rupees a bottle, and lots of money for limca and sodas and toothpaste. But Krishna's garland, well, I don't have much money for that. He says, how much is a garland, rose garland? He says, 10 rupees. Oh, that's too much. How much is this little white one? Oh, that's 2 rupees. Oh, okay, I'll take that. I'll get this little one. So he buys this little 2 rupee one or 5 rupee one with a good intention. I want to offer a garland to Krishna. And he goes and he gives it to Bajari, and usually they offer it. And it has absolutely no scent, zero. So your intention was good, but your action was aparad. So we have a phrase in English called, which goes like this. The pathway to hell is paved with good intentions. So the path to hell, sometimes they do new paving. They put a new coating of cement on it or a new coating of asphalt is black tar on an old road to make it nice and pukka. And the road goes from here to there. So the pathway to hell is surfaced or repaved with good intentions. Or we have a phrase. Once I was joking with someone when I was young. They say, well, when you die, because my father died, my grandfather died, and they bury them in the ground in the West, and they make a little stone. They got a piece of granite. It's actually granite. I guess it's pretty costly, but that's what they do. It's called a tombstone. It's a stone which marks the tomb or the coffin or the box where you're in the ground. So on there it says, here lies John Doe. Here lies. Under the ground is Mr. John Doe, right? So we would joke sometimes as kids, and they say, "Oh, what do you want to put written on your stone when you die?" And I said, "You write this on my stone. He meant well, but he went to hell." I said, "This you put. You don't put any name, and you let people try to figure out who was that. He meant well, but." He went to hell. That's a little poem, right? So the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Because you're so cheap, so damn cheap, that if you don't have enough money to buy a nice garland, a fragrant garland, then don't buy a garland. Simple. Either give me what I want, give me what I like, or don't give me anything. It's simple. Is it difficult? So, now what to do? But I want to offer a garland. So, offer a garland with you. Offering a garland means offering. Does it mean offering your hands? Does it mean offering your wallet? What does it mean, offering a garland? It means offering your heart. Your love. Your heart means your love. So, your love can be offered with your eyes. Your love can be offered with your words. Your love can be offered and shown with your hands. Your love can be offered and shown with your money. Your love can be offered and shown with your mind. That's called Manasi Puja. So, oh, I'm a poor Russian, I'm a poor Indian, I'm a poor whatever. I know. So I don't have money. I have a little money just for a little roti and a little rent, and I don't have money for flower garlands. No problem. You sit in front of Thakurji and say, Krishna, you know I have no money. Whatever little bit you give me, just enough for a little sweet, a little misery, a little milk. You know my situation. But today, watch the garland I make you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Oh, 3 roses, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. 10 bela flowers, Hare Krishna, Krishna. 3 roses, 10 bela flowers, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. 1 blue lotus flower. I've gone to Tibet to Mansarovar Mountain. I've gone 15,000 meters up in the mountains to a beautiful lake. And I went out in the lake and I picked this beautiful blue lotus flower blossoming so beautifully. So many petals and so much yellow pollen. Fragrant, so fragrant. I put that in the middle of the garland. And the blue lotus flowers in the middle. On either side there's 10 bela flowers and then 3 red roses and 10 bela. Then 3 red roses, then all bela around the neck, around Krishna's neck. Now Krishna, I sprinkle some Jamuna gel there, Radhakund gel, Achmaniyam, Yam Pushpat Malyam, Srim Klim Radhakrishna Bhyam Namah. Ah, Krishna, you please take this. Ah. So whose garland is better? Is that mala better? Or is the mala better, the guy, the Punjabi guy, says, hey, how much the mala? That is 25 rupees.
6-foot rose garland. Yeah, give me 50 rupees. Goes, hey, Pujari, take these mala. You know, then and give them back. I want them back. One for me, one for my wife. So then Pujari does Achman, he offers the garland, gives them back to the Mr. Punjabi, Bhakta Punjabi. So it's a better offering. Because he has 50 rupees. He bought beautiful rose garlands, very fragrant. Where's the bhav? Where's the heart? Where's the mentality? Are these garlands for Krishna? Or are these for his wife? And him? Can you understand this? So, better either you, or if you, so the system, no limit to how to offer Krishna. Or you may go to the, you may have money to buy a mala, and you see the mala and you say, ah, this is crappy, only rose garlands? Krishna, I don't want to offer you this rose garland. Every day you get rose garlands. I have 10 rupees, I can buy a rose garland. I want to offer you something better than that. So you go in a temple and you close your eyes, you sit in front of Radha Shyama Sundar, you close your eyes. You chant Gopal Mantra, Kam Gayatri, Maha Mantra. And then you make the most beautiful garland, 8 feet long, with this flower, that flower. You spend 15 minutes stringing the flowers. Then you offer it. And that'd be the best mala that Krishna got the whole day. He got 500 malas offered to him that day, or 1,000 malas were offered to him. And that mala he'll accept. And that mala, you may find someday that mala is hanging around your neck when you open your eyes. Because that's what happened to Srinivasacharya. You know Srinivasacharya, his Bhajan Kuti is over there. Maybe it happened over there. Right down the road by Damodar and Shyamasundar Mandir, or Srinivasacharya's Baitak. It's in control of Bhakti Swarup Damodar Swami and Manohar. Madan Manohar lives there. So this is described in biography. Srinivasacharya is in his Manasi Seva, in his Mandri Roop, doing meditation. He's offering this beautiful, beautiful, fragrant garland to Radha Madhava in his Smaran meditation, Leela Smaran, Manasi Seva. Then he wakes up, and he's in Prakrita Leela, millions of miles away. He's in the material world. There's no Krishna. Everything is only 300, 400 years ago, 500 years ago. This Krishna is in Aprakat Leela. And he meditates and offering his beautiful garland as I'm describing and have described. And he wakes up, he looks down, he smells, what's that fragrance? Oh, what is that? What trees are blossoming? It's winter time. It's winter now. There's no trees blossoming. It's not springtime. Oh, what a celestial heavenly fragrance. Where's it coming from? Then he looks, Hare. He sees hanging on his neck the very same garland that he offered in his Leela Smaran, his Manasi Seva to Radha and Krishna. That they were so happy and so pleased that they sent it by courier mail for the spiritual world. They faxed it. They sent a Sims message or an email or whatever. They sent it all the way down somehow or other in their own transcendental way, right back to him. That's called loving reciprocation with a pure devotee. So, I want to offer that kind of mala. Forget your 10 rupee rose garlands. Forget your 25 rupee tulsi malas. You can pay 25 rupees and get a 4-foot tulsi mala. And make your own tulsi mala. Forget, I'll keep my 25 rupees. I'm not going to give it to you like that. But also we should offer, but also there's also regulations. One should offer every day fresh flowers to the deities, if you have a means, which we read that in another rule. One should not fail to worship the deity according to his means.